Record. So welcome everyone.
No, we don't know where Tony's. We don't know where Tony's from.
Nashville.
Janet in Nashville.
Okay, I'll change you. So I want to welcome everyone to this Clinical Services Professionals Affinity Group, and it's good to see everyone on this call. I'm sure we have a lot to talk about. I am so happy that Elaine Rotenberg is our chair of this group. She's always so thoughtful and really always wants to make it beneficial and pertinent to what is going on in everyone's communities. So thank you for your leadership, Elaine, in this group. And I guess take it away.
Okay. So hi, everybody.
Hi there.
How you doing? I'm just so happy to see clinical professionals. Like, thumbs up if we're like really happy.
Yeah.
You know, I co-facilitate a weekly support group called Coping with Our New Reality with another psychologist, where we do it weekly for the community. And we always make a point of spending like 30 minutes before kind of screaming and pulling our hair out and trying to figure out how we're doing. So anytime I have a group of other professionals, other than the 20 million Zoom meetings a day, I just like want to like, I don't even know all of you, Lisa, this is so funny, but I just like want to hug all of you. Hello. Aww. It's just like, it's like a time, right? We're going through a time. So we decided today, instead of necessarily a topic, because I think we're like sort of all in the topic of living through this, I will throw out a couple of words and maybe let people take it in a direction that will be most helpful. So I was thinking about a few words. So I was thinking of telehealth. I was thinking about managing therapists. I was thinking about re-entry. And I was thinking about Zoom fatigue. Those were just a few things on my mind, of topics, you know, that, and I don't want to direct us, but I'm happy once we jump in to facilitate whatever you think is going to be most helpful for you guys, for us as a group. Who's got a particular issue they want to make sure we handle today?
Well, I mean, I'll say that I would love to hear about the different, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I was going to say that I'd love to hear about the different teletherapy platforms, how people are doing it for the most part, doing the teletherapy on the telephone or on a computer platform. What happens when a lot of the clients are not able to afford a computer platform? And I'm seeing that this is probably one of the positive things that's come out of this virus, is that we have an opportunity to reach a lot more people in a wider geographic area. And with the transportation challenges, this also makes sure people really do show up and they're there and they're really participating. So I think that's been a real plus, even though, you know, there are clients who really miss that, you know, direct contact in the office.
I think the one thing that I would like to discuss at some point is because of the telehealth, we've been so overwhelmed with clients that a lot of our therapists are really getting overwhelmed, and because they're stressing from their own anxiety of COVID, and then they're carrying all the other anxiety from their clients. So I'd like to find out what people are doing to help their therapists through this time.
Great
topic. I just wanted to
Lisa, let's just hear some more topics, okay?
I have something.
Yeah.
I'm Shai from Youngstown. I'm a EMDR therapist. I don't like to do supportive therapy and just talk therapy. I'm not like, and I found myself, especially with senior, that we did some progress. We did like pre-processing trauma. I found myself hard time to do it over the phone because I don't have Zoom. I cannot like do bilateral stimulation. We do a lot of mindfulness over the phone, but it's not the same. So maybe people have ideas how we can do more trauma-informed care over the phone and not stay in the supportive retreat. It's work wonderful, but it's not something that, you know, I would like to stay in a more trauma-informed care
model
and reprocessing traumas and just if people have, yes.
And Shai, you're not using video, you're just using telephone?
No, I use, but people don't have. Like, I have people with, don't have cell phone, only home phone. Many seniors. I work mainly with seniors. And 8 out of 10 of my seniors that I used to see on a weekly basis don't have. I'm thinking even buying them now a grant of buying them smartphone so we can do the work that we did. I did EMDR, amazing EMDR. Like, we did amazing job for the last 6-7 months. And now I just cannot do it over the phone. So for them, it's even lack of, like, they used to get something, for example, like, you know, this, and now they don't even, they get like more supportive, which is great, but not this thing that they came from therapy. People with like severe mental health.
Thank you.
So,
yeah,
I would, if someone know, I would like to, you know, talk to someone.
Rachel has something to say. Yeah.
Rachel?
Oh, you have to unmute yourself.
Similar to the topic of supporting. Oh, sorry.
Rachel, go ahead.
Similar to the topic. Okay, thank you. Similar to the topic of supporting therapists who are feeling overwhelmed, you know, having their own anxiety around COVID and then listening to however many clients a day, their anxiety. Now, as we're starting to think about reentry, although we currently in Charlotte, we don't have a plan. I don't think it's going to be anytime soon, but in North Carolina, they're starting sort of some phased opening. So we are seeing, like, right as our clients were starting to get sort of settled with where they were, we're seeing a lot of anxiety now about some phased reentry. And then my therapists are coming to me with a lot of anxiety and questions I don't have answers to about, like, what our plan is. So just sort of how we're going to support when they're really not, I mean, at least for us, we don't have a ton of answers. And then when we do go back, at least where we're located, there are going to be temperature checks and PPE and, you know, a really kind of strict protocol. And I'm not saying that we should talk about the protocol here, but more of kind of the mental health effects of those kinds of things being in place, both on our staff and our clients. So that's something that's on my mind as we're starting to think about going into the summer and some kind of reopening.
I think that's on everyone's mind, Rachel.
And I think Dan wanted to say something.
Yeah, so thanks, Elaine. I'm in Atlanta, and certainly, I don't know how much national coverage Georgia has gotten, but we've gotten, you know, our governor has taken a very aggressive stance towards reopening.
You've gotten a lot. My daughter lives in your state, and she's losing her mind.
It's not been good.
Yes, I know. I don't take credit for the governor, I promise. But not to be political. But yeah, so there's, like, you know, as tattoo parlors and as hairstylists open up, there is some. We're at least having the conversation, and thankfully we're taking a very cautious and scientific approach. But I do think I would love to hear kind of what other folks are thinking about in terms of reopening, because, you know, the screening questions are kind of worthless. So we just love to hear what other folks are kind of doing process wise. And I'm going to take the other tack. I feel like my therapist are in an okay place because of what we're doing with it, but it's more the, I would like to talk about kind of nuts and bolts a little bit and what y'all are thinking.
Okay. Other people?
Yeah.
Donna.
Go ahead.
We have some clients who, although they have a telephone, because we can do both telephone and Zoom, although they have a telephone, they're saying they do not have a private place in their apartments, houses, et cetera. And I want to know how other people are handling that. It's been too cold in New York to tell everybody actually to go outside. And if someone lives in an apartment building, going outside is not the answer either. So we've actually been playing with the idea of allowing, we have many different programs within our organization, but the only one that is live and in the building right now are the clinicians. Half are working from home, half are working in the clinic without any clients coming in. They all have their own offices, et cetera, and it's by preference who preferred to come in. So I just want to know if anyone is having anyone come in at this time. And we've actually been playing with different ideas of how to have those clients come in. There's probably four total out of our entire clinic, but having those clients possibly coming in, having them going into an empty office possibly, et cetera. So brainstorming on that. And if anyone has found a solution to that, but I'm seeing a lot of heads shaking with that.
Okay. So that, let's hold on. Are there any other topics? Because that somebody wants to make sure Stacy, you're trying to talk, but you're muted still.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I have a specific question about, we have a large school-based program. We serve students and families in Denver Public Schools, and that team has been having extreme difficulty reaching their students because of both lack of internet, technology, and just depending on parents that are stressed and whatever. And I just didn't know if anyone else has a school program and if they have any thoughts or if they have problems or if they have solutions. I'm just interested in, it's a lot easier to connect in our other two programs with clients than this one.
Does anyone on this call have a school program?
Yes, we do.
So maybe you two can put your emails in the chat as well and you can talk offline.
Right.
If that
so we can get your specific, yeah. And any other, I'm just looking for other general topics that people want to make sure we spend time talking on now. Lisa, I'm thinking that what we talked about, the biggest question, it sounds like that we're all, if we're in agreement, starting to talk about some of the things related to, somebody had a specific, some specific telehealth questions in terms of platforms you're using. That's one, did people have that question? Is there, just a show of hands, is there anybody here not using telehealth at this point?
Everybody
is doing it. Okay. And
Zoom is what I would say. How many people are using Zoom? Raise your hands. Right? And how many people are using Doxy? Point me. So those are the two that are the most popular. Debbie, and I can give you the information about them.
And the Zoom used others as well.
What? What else is someone using?
And in terms of as well.
What are you using, Margaret?
We use Skype for Business, Microsoft Teams. Now we're allowed in California, the county of LA has allowed for even FaceTime so that people have access in multiple ways.
It's going to change, though.
Whatever works.
So that's what, that's what I want to, let me just say something about that. And I want to clarify something that came up on our call, I think last month, or maybe it was a different call. So there was question about reimbursement in terms of telephone only. And there were some discrepancies about that. And just to clarify so that everybody knows that now, at least for the time being, Medicare has approved telephone only, which was a big discrepancy, and that's like huge. So everybody, we should kind of know that. But to your point, Lisa, and what you're saying also, Ellie, is part of what's going to happen is that even though there's been some loosening up of guidelines so that we can use anything that works right now, I think the thing to be cautious about is that this is going to change. So there's going to be a point that FaceTime is not going to work anymore because we're going to be told that we can't use that. Okay. So
either that or there will be actually changes to the platform. I think some of the platforms are also working on becoming more compliant with the law. By that time, perhaps they will be.
Right. The other thing is that for those of you that are using Zoom, are you using the HIPAA compliant Zoom?
Yes.
Okay.
We're trying to get licenses for the HIPAA compliant Zoom, and our IT department in Chicago has just been overwhelmed with a variety of things, so we have not yet switched over, but that's our plan from the regular Zoom to the HIPAA compliant.
And we haven't switched over yet either.
Right. Everyone will have to at one point.
Yeah, I would really encourage you to do that with Zoom, especially because of how much Zoom is being used, how open it is, how much Zoom bombing is going on. Right. And then the other thing to know about that is that this is a question that somebody had asked me, and the answer to this is, if you initiate the invitation using Zoom HIPAA compliant, it does not matter if the client has a HIPAA compliant Zoom or not. Okay. Right. If it's based on who initiates the call. But if a client wants to set, like I had one therapist who's very computer phobic, and she was really excited. She said, well, my client just invited me to the Zoom meeting. And that was what caused us to look into this. And it has to be initiated by you. And then it doesn't matter if they're HIPAA compliant system. Okay. So
just so you know, if you are looking into the HIPAA compliant version, there's a lot of packages you can get where you get a HIPAA compliant Zoom, you get encrypted email, you get a bunch of different things that are really kind of needed at this time. So don't just automatically buy it off the Zoom website. Check out, there might be some deals out there if the money's a problem, because it is pretty expensive.
Right, expensive.
In terms of, I'm feeling, Lisa, like there's a big need to kind of talk about some of the re-entry stuff that people have been thinking about. That feels like the biggest one, but I want to make sure there were a couple of more specific questions. It sounded like maybe somebody had a question about you were asking about trauma informed over the telephone. I don't think I have. Does anybody have a good solution for that?
I'm sorry, Douglas, go ahead and speak.
I'm sorry, Douglas wanted to.
Yeah.
Sorry, I know this is so hard talking over each other, but I found it hard to do it over the telephone. I just rely so much on, especially with trauma work in terms of body language and those kinds of things. So I really try to get people hooked up with Zoom or something like that. And frankly, helping them get a good internet connection is really important also, just because with the choppiness, it's even harder to kind of gauge where people are at. So I'm very cautious when doing it. I'm not seeing all the data basically.
Right.
Shai, one thing, what we've done is we have a person that kind of, we have found with our seniors, obviously, that's sort of a huge problem. And so we've actually, I have a staff person that's really working sort of she's our volunteer coordinator, but she's happens to be good technologically. So she's really working individually, kind of talking seniors through, helping them get on. So I think sometimes taking it away from the clinicians and seeing if there's somebody within the organization that can really is willing to kind of, obviously with the client's permission, talk the clients through the technology piece and getting them connected. Separating that from the therapist or the case managers has relieved a lot of stress and anxiety for the therapists as well. So if you have a client that maybe has a computer, a lot of the seniors like do FaceTime with their grandkids. They just can't figure out the Zoom piece. So if they gave you permission to speak to a person, a tech person or something, then, you know, prior to your session, they could spend time talking to them. And that's just one thing that we've tried to do.
I was actually thinking about like writing a grant right now for emergency grant for seniors, because most of them, and then I'm going to have cell phones with already like WhatsApp, Zoom, whatever, so they can get, you know, for a weekly, whatever. We can be creative, but I was like, it's only like, let's say $1,000 investment, or it's not too much. I was thinking some of them.
Did your agency get any of that federal money? Because you could use that federal money for something like that.
Okay, I will check. I am, okay.
If they got that federal emergency money,
I think so.
If they did, I would have you, maybe some of you are nodding in agreement, but you can use that money to say that, you know, seniors in terms of their mental health support may need to have, you know, laptops or whatever it is they need, Chromebooks and things like that.
Okay, I'd like to say, Shai, I'll reach out to you after this and we'll talk.
Thank you,
okay,
Lisa.
About different kinds of things. We should talk about reentry. Yeah.
Thank you, Lisa. Let's talk about reentry. Who's got a plan?
Give a little bit, Rachel.
So we have a little bit of a plan. And mainly our plan is to stagger reopening to where we have two or three people in the building at a time. Our plan is to put plexiglass up around reception desk or barriers up around reception desk. And we're prioritizing the services that we're not able to provide via telehealth. So our psychoeducational evaluations and really our psychiatric consultation are the first, that's the first plan to move back into the building, but again, on a very staggered approach. And then looking at bringing some of the kid therapy back into the building, because so much of the play work has really taken with young kids has not happened. You know, that said, we're talking about people being in full PPE when they can be in full PPE. But you know, I feel strongly that I don't want to be doing therapy behind a mask, quite honestly. So most of our traditional therapy is going to stay telehealth. You know, we're really going to only bring in folks that that we haven't been able to serve and that we're able to do some insured safety planning around. So psychiatrists will be in a mask, patients will be in masks, and they'll be 10 feet apart. Play therapy is a whole other question. And we'll probably have the kids in gloves if they're touching toys and things like that. But we're taking a very conservative approach. And I don't see this happening. You know, we're also saying that we're listening to science. Even though our governor doesn't, we're going to listen to science. And I don't see us being in the building, even in a staggered way, for another, you know, month probably.
Okay.
I have a question. Are people's offices large enough to have 6 feet distance? That's what we've been talking about in a lot of places, that you can't even do it necessarily.
Ours are.
Like in your conference room, right? And that's not great. So
we have a couple of rooms, but we'll move testing to other rooms where we can have 6 to 10 feet.
And well, you have a big agency, Atlanta.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And so that's where we're also going to, you know, we're looking at putting up plexiglass barriers for things
for testing.
Like testing. Yep.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
I'd like to share a little bit. Number one, we are not there yet at all. We were just told by the county that it's another 3 months. You know, we are definitely stretching this out. But what we've done is convene a task force internally in the agency representing all of the services, representation, not just from the top levels, but all the way down. And tomorrow is our first meeting. It's about 22 people, and we will very gradually look at each area step by step, because on the clinical side, I think that's actually going to be the last of them, because our food programs are you know, half of our people are working now,
right,
on site, because we have food programs and things like that. But for the clinical, a lot of our clinical work is in home. And so that's not going to happen anytime soon. So we have really relied a lot on the telehealth side. And we will I think in the future be a hybrid situation. As for the in-person piece, I think we are not there yet at all, and we don't have a clear plan. And that will be something that will hopefully take input from everyone in the agency, because clients and staff are not prepared yet to do that. And we are not prepared to put them in that position. So we will hopefully do this in a very planned, thoughtful, gradual way so that everyone can be on board.
Thank you. Sharon?
In Chicago at CJE, where we work exclusively with older adults, I'd say we're in the early-ish stages of developing a plan to reopen. And we're talking program by program, including the counseling program, about kind of what criteria would need to be met for us to return rather than having exact dates. But we are following our governor's guidelines, which are very science-based, with a 5-stage plan for reopening. And so we're developing an agency plan to coincide with each of those stages. And we are talking about continuing at home for those who are successfully doing telehealth, as long as that seems practical. So we don't have an agenda to get back in the office prematurely in any way. But we're talking about when we do first reopening to staff. Virtually all of our staff are at home right now. And then we would have PPE and social distancing once staff returns to the office, and then a plan to gradually serve clients who are not being effectively served through these other platforms for the reasons people are mentioning. So that's our plan. We've also talked a lot, frankly, about hearing from seniors how many, very concerningly, are not taking reasonable precautions, and we're not sure how soon we'll want to see them based on what we're hearing for some of them in terms of our own safety and also the risk that we pose to other older adults. So we'll take a slow, steadfast approach to planning.
That's an interesting question. Like, how many of you are really thinking about, I'm back to your point, Lisa, about the office space. I mean, is anybody actually thinking about bringing clients back for traditional psychotherapy sessions at this point?
Wow. Isn't that interesting? No. Not one
wow.
person of the 20, seven
wow.
people, or however many.
That's really
people.
Interesting.
So we are as well. I heard the question. I just wasn't in front of it.
Wait, you are? Everybody's saying no, they're not. Is anybody thinking about taking...
We what I talked about in the beginning, we have a couple of clients that we thought this was be more short term, and they're saying they are uncomfortable using the telephone, et cetera. So before we do our reopening, we're thinking about allowing a couple of clients to come in. We would be using a conference room that we have on a different floor than where our offices are.
Huh. So, and they could, how would that work? What would that actually look like? So you'd have a conference room. And then what happens in the conference room?
Well, they wouldn't be going by a reception office, because that's not the way you get into that conference room. We don't have this completely formalized. I was hoping somebody here was already doing it, but
Donna, you're the trailblazer. You go. We're gonna sit here with our masks. You go.
With our 4 clients right now that are saying, I really need help, but I'm uncomfortable, don't have the space, et cetera. They'd be coming in. We're on the second floor. This is on the first floor, on space that's empty right now. Okay. We would have they would buzz when they get there. Clinician would meet them downstairs, stay apart. Walk
with a mask? Wait, with a mask?
Everybody with a mask. Everybody has a mask, yes.
Clinician too?
Yes.
Okay, so then what would happen? Clinician would go to greet the person with the mask. They're wearing a mask.
Yes, unlock the door, let them in, and it's a conference room with a very long table, and they would sit at least 10 feet apart, and the person would exit right after the session and leave.
Works.
So that's it. Now, the other option we thought about for those people that are saying they don't have a safe space at home is to allow them into that conference room, allow them to use that phone and talk to the clinician upstairs in their office. So that's an A plan, but then there's always then we've got to clean that room, obviously, afterwards, and all of that great stuff, and can we leave them alone down there? So we're trying to figure that one out.
That seems hard.
But as I think I mentioned in the beginning. We do have four of our clinicians are coming to work every day in the office because we have a, but there's, as I said, there's absolutely no clients right now. They're in larger private offices because it's a very old building and it's by their choice.
But they're doing telehealth from their offices.
Yes, but my point is that we don't have that hurdle for them to have to come back to the office because they're already there.
Right.
So that psychological hurdle, we've already gotten past that with them.
Right.
So Karen from Sarasota just went off. I don't know if you're still here, Karen. I think you said you were bringing people back.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Are you?
We haven't started yet. So I was happy to hear from Donna last time they're doing it. But our agency, which is JFCS in Sarasota, has a very fluid date of June 1st, which is only in 2 weeks.
Right.
Getting feedback, like especially from our front desk staff, who at least a couple of them are in the higher risk category because of their age, and they're quite concerned because in our office, it's all secure. Everything's locked down. Everything's in and out. And so you have, the only option besides the front desk area is to go through a back stairwell, which is probably not a good idea. It's not an open area. So I'm not sure.
Interesting.
How it's going to work.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Somebody else.
We're thinking about, so I have three clients that they're actually working right now at the JCC. So they came to my office. It was weird because I have a small office, so we couldn't. Their teacher, we have the pandemic daycare, so it's kind of weird because they also work. So we didn't feel that we need to keep this because they're kind of my colleague. But we are thinking about maybe move to the JCC when the JCC is going to open. It's a big space. It's a bring. They don't even have to touch any doors. They don't know who they are. Like, you know, they can just get, you know, the key fob. We are literally 2 minutes walk from the JCC, so people can walk. But it's something that we already had clients that ask if they can come, you know, especially my seniors that, you know, insist, you know, that. So we are thinking about when the JCC is going to open, we're probably going to take the library. So it's literally, we chose one big room from there. And then they literally don't have to touch anything.
Right.
It's just an idea for
right,
different
good idea.
It's an interesting.
You know,
yeah, it's a good
you
idea.
Nobody's gonna know who they are. They're just gonna get the JCC, you know, fob, like.
Right.
And that's all. It's like they're gonna be member because we're gonna get permission for the like a pandemic daycare. So slowly, Ohio. Going
we understand, Shai. It's a good idea.
Shai, thank you. So what's interesting about that, what both Shai and Donna are suggesting, is the possibility for some clients, if
yes.
they, of having like the massive conference room and having them sit apart, which is very interesting. And it sounds like there's nobody on this call right now, which is a good thing for us to all know, that is thinking about having a return yet, even with masks, to a traditional therapy office. That's really an interesting point. I will tell you that our office, our building has been, we have a main building, then we have a satellite counseling office. Our main building has been open this whole time, but we're not seeing clients, but we have a lot of other programs. That's our administrative office and things. So we have a receptionist who's still there, but people are not coming in the building. Deliveries come, but they have to leave them outside the locked door. And we're talking now about a reentry if staff want to start coming back, that in the main walking area, they all have to wear masks in the main area. And I don't know if some of you have a lunchroom, but we're going to make some changes there where the lunchroom door is open. And staff are going to be, which are not usually allowed or encouraged to eat at their desks, are going to be told to eat at their desks.
Huh.
That'll be a change. And, you know, and if there's a common space like that, I don't know what the number is going to be, but something like, you know, if you're going there to get your cup of coffee between clients, if there are five people in the room, don't enter.
Right.
You know, to kind of max that out. That's another thing. But right now, like to what most of you are saying, my therapists have been very productive with telehealth, and they want to continue it. And they want to, and I'm actually seeing it, some of you may have said this, but you know, we have geographical breakdown areas as our agencies, and like the JFS further next north to us is not till Orlando. There's a lot of ground in Florida, for example, between West Palm Beach and Orlando. And so there's counties, two counties above us, that we are going to try to actually reach out more to those rabbis and offer them telemental health services in a way we haven't been able to do before. So I'm looking at this as an opportunity at some point for growth. Keep them away from the office now. What are other people doing about reentry at this point?
This is Ann in Cincinnati, Ohio. And as Shay mentioned, our medical is back and our offices could open. We are located with our JCC and our federation and a synagogue. So we have a community-wide task force called Safe Cincinnati that was already in existence, and they're actually working on all the reentry protocol. So it's a community-wide effort across the entire community. Our offices are certainly not 6 feet apart, and neither are our counseling spaces. So we would have to be creative, and we're probably going to have to hold our hand up a lot and make sure they remember us in this reentry process. But right now, all of our clinical services, the therapy services, are done through telehealth.
Yeah. In some ways, guys, I think we, in this particular affinity group, in some ways, not that we don't do in-home counseling and things like that, but in some ways, I think some of our challenges are easier to manage than the senior case management in-home programs right now, which are, you know, trying to figure that piece out. That is, you know, really challenging as well. Oh, there's a cute baby in Dallas right now.
Were you going to say something, Alika?
Alika, yeah. We're just starting out with, we're going to reopen transportation either next week or the week after, just our transportation services to medical appointments. And if, I don't know if any other ones do transportation, but we have this long protocol that our director wrote up. And I think this challenge is going to be working with the physician off the doctor offices at, you know, keeping the space. If they have to wait in the car, do they wait with the driver? Do they wait inside? Are there any other agencies that are starting transportation? And if yes, how have you been doing it?
This is a clinical call. I'm not sure that people are doing transportation on this call. Are they? I haven't looked out with you. I know of agencies.
You can do that offline.
I know of agencies. Oh, Margaret, sure. Peggy from LA can reach out to you.
I will email her offline and we can continue talking about it after.
That's part of it.
You can also email me and I can put you in touch with our office.
Terrific. Mm-hmm. So they'll put their emails in the chat, Aleka, and you can reach out to them. Thank you, Dan and Peggy.
Rachel, I think you wanted to say something.
Rachel, you're muted.
You're muted.
I did the opposite thing that I wanted to do. So for us, we are located in Charlotte on Shalom Park, which is a large campus of about 14 Jewish agencies. So the foundation of Shalom Park has developed a very extensive plan for reopening, including screening for everyone entering, removal of furniture in all shared spaces like conference rooms and, you know, the couches in the JCC, divided hallways with directions where people can walk. It's very extensive in the greater sort of building because there's a JCC, there's two temples. So for JFS, our plan, and our first meeting was at 11:30 a.m. this morning, so we're just in the very beginning of this, is, you know, we're not even thinking about staff going back until July at the very earliest, and we'll kind of reevaluate. But we're not really thinking about clients going back because there's no way to social distance in our offices, even if, like walking down the hallway with a client. There's so many things to think about, even if you were to have a mask when you got your client our waiting room is really small, even if we took out all the furniture. And how, so once we started thinking about the barriers, telehealth is going so well that we sort of are like, we're not even going to start thinking about clients coming back. We'll reevaluate maybe in September and see where we are. We might start having staff come back in some kind of staggered two or three in the office at a time. But I don't know, and this is kind of what I wanted to know for those of you who maybe have started talking to your staff, because I haven't shared this. Are they going to like that idea? Are they going to think, why am I going through all of this to just do telehealth in an office instead of telehealth at home? Mm-hmm. Is it better for morale to have a little FaceTime in the office versus I haven't seen anyone in person for 2 months? I don't, and maybe I don't, you know, it's hard to know.
That's a really interesting question, Rachel.
It's like, I can't do supervision with them in my office.
Rachel,
I say, go into your office and call me.
May I speak to that? Can I speak to that?
Please.
Hi, I'm sorry. I don't know why my face isn't on today, but you know, you're not missing it.
Eve, we would like to see you sometime.
I wish you could, but I don't know how to get on.
No worries.
We had a meeting yesterday about whether or not it's time to come back. And so my CEO said, you know, when do you think you'll be ready to come back and see people in the office? Now, I would say 50% of my clientele is over 65. So I don't think they're running back anytime soon. And I myself am over 60. So, but under 65. So
me too, right there with you, Eve.
Okay. So Matt said to me, you know, when do you think, and I said, I really don't know. I'm not terribly comfortable coming in now. I feel much safer here in my home, and the teletherapy is going so well. And he said, well, can't you do the teletherapy in the office? And I said, yes, I could, but what's the difference? And he said, well, you'd be more available for consultation, which is really funny because I have my teletherapy screen and then I have my phone. And so I can actually be doing consultation, you know, right after my teletherapy session because, you know, I'm multitasking. So the reality is that I've gotten to a place now after 2 months of, you know, I hated it in the beginning, but you adapt to everything. And I definitely don't want to do this forever, but I don't know that I personally would be comfortable going back. And I said, I'm just going to do this as long as I can because I think I'll be better at it without being anxious.
You'll be better at what? Eve, what do you mean you'll be better at what?
I'll be better at my job if I'm not continually, if I feel safe.
Right, okay, I got you.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that you bring up a good point. I mean, what are other people thinking about that comment? Yeah, Debbie.
I'm the director and I do clinical, and we're a small agency, but I did send out like a survey. I had heard it on one of the calls. Somebody talked about sending out a survey to all your staff people to talk to them about their job, how they felt they could do it. Did they want to return? Did they not want to return? And, you know, in seeing their responses, basically right now we have maybe one person coming in per day. We are giving out food and we're giving it out in our parking lot. So we ask people to wear a mask and to stand back. But we, and our administrator goes in and I go in about once a week for a couple hours and we have a, you know, complex protocol to wipe everything down. But I see us also moving in phases. I have a lot of staff who are not comfortable coming in. And I guess that is a question. At what point, if you have your like coordinator of your food pantry who can't come into your food pantry, you know, at what point do you say, well, maybe that's not the best idea. And I have other staff who are willing to fill in for the food pantry coordinator. They are doing they're handing out the food. So the other thing this kind of presents in terms of a challenge is maybe there will be some staff shifts. Maybe we will need more therapists. We're down a therapist right now and I see the therapy growing. So I think it causes you to really reexamine what the whole picture looks like.
Thank you for that, Debbie. Are most people here in your agencies finding that there is an increase in counseling calls from before COVID?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, interesting. More yeah. no than yes.
More no, yeah, I think more no than yes also.
There are many more calls, but they are for financial, for food, for
right.
you know, essential services.
Yeah, that's what I think. And I think that we've not yet, I was on a call, I forget which call, because there's so many of them, but where they were talking about making sure that we remember that we're not, that people are living through this now and dealing with the essentials, and whatever trauma implications there are I mean, we it's too soon to be PTSD, for example. We're not there yet, but we're going to see that. But we're not going to see that yet.
Right.
So I don't know if people saw the article from the Washington Post a few days ago about the shadow pandemic.
The what was it? What was it, Dan?
They frame it as a shadow pandemic in mental health. It's yet to come.
Right.
You know, that the mental health concerns are going to spike after the coronavirus pandemic. It was, I'll send you the link to the article if you want to send it out.
Yeah, but that'd be great.
I think it was a great article. You know, I was going to say that, you know, I see my agency, my clinical services, becoming much more of a hybrid between telehealth and, right. and in service or in office. Because, you know, frankly, my people are loving working from home. It's there's no commute. There's a 1 minute commute versus a 45 minute commute. So people are being more productive, and I see us becoming hybrid much more than, you know, going back to the way things were.
I definitely think that's what I'm hearing from agencies across the board, that, you know, this has really changed the future of their agencies and how they do, you know, clinical counseling and services. And it makes sense because it does seem like you're able to reach a much larger population and you can do the same thing. But what I have noticed, and I wonder how it impacts people, is the broadband in people's homes. Like, you know, even on this call, some people are sort of frozen or delayed, you know, conversation. And sometimes I am. Right before this call, I told Elaine, oh my gosh, I can't get on. You know, my internet went down. You know, I don't know if that's impacted anyone, if that's important to talk about or not.
Lisa, I think that's an interesting segue to talk to some of, there were some specific questions about the whole mental health piece of it. I think it definitely, we have had a couple of clients get so frustrated with the fact that the broadband, the internet somehow didn't work in the middle of a counseling session. And they were basically storming out of their sessions, their telehealth sessions. Like, you know, like, that's it, I can't do this anymore. You know, because of the technology piece of it. That's a whole other piece that, you know, you're making me think about in terms of that.
I think that's our biggest barrier. With reaching people is that there's a number of poor folks in Denver and surrounding metro area that do not have adequate internet to support telehealth services. So even if if they got a device like Chromebooks from school or something, they don't have internet.
Right.
And we serve, we have a focus on older adults. And what we find is a number of our older adults are not familiar with the technology, would ordinarily rely on an adult child to assist, but we know the situation of that. We're all certainly hearing across all sorts of sectors more of a hybrid model. And keep in mind, there have been lots of businesses and companies and organizations, and I've experienced that as well on the human service side in prior positions, where there's something of a work from home component. And oftentimes that's been driven by real estate and how expensive real estate's from it is. So while I'm currently in Birmingham, I was in Boston up until a year ago. And with real estate being so expensive, a lot of work from home services. I do also want to add that, so here at CJFS, we're a small agency, and we provide a range of services. and including some services that really have to be done in the home. And we are just starting right now to do a slow and measured resumption of our personal care services. We provide some house cleaning and some meal prep and laundry to keep seniors who are at risk in subsidized housing in their homes. And we're only just going to start to do that, quote, reboot. So ordinarily our, and we don't vend out to an agency for that. We have 5 personal care staff. And what we're doing is ordinarily the personal care staff will see 4 or 5 or 6 people a day on a weekly basis. And what we're starting with is next week, our 5 personal care staff are each going to see 1 person per day. And it is rather dizzying in terms of putting together workflows and protocols, not to mention all the supplies, because previously we would have our staff use the supplies that the individual had. We're finding with counseling, and one of the therapist was saying a few weeks ago, while in our mental health world, we're thinking surely people have trauma, we're actually finding, and again, small counseling program, all of our programs are small, people have been really hunkering down and coping. So we're getting a number of check-in calls of 15 or 20 minutes. It's not a counseling session. You can't bill for that. We're not seeing people be averse to telehealth, but people so far are really hunkering down pretty well. Go ahead.
I haven't heard that.
Yeah. So the other things were, so we look forward to seeing learning a lot as our personal care staff are now going to start next week to be in the homes. We've been continuing with our food programs, our delivering food to seniors, and several of us, myself included, have done some grocery runs from our food closet. We do also pay for some shipped orders for folks or facilitate that. People don't have the money for food deliveries. We'll see how the personal care unfolds. And our next thought is for those seniors in particular, where we and others, where we do in-home care management, what that's going to look like, how that's going to look, along with we do provide transportation. We have staff who take people to appointments in cars. We have a small bus. It's very fluid.
Marcy, I think your point of that being fluid is really an important one. I think it's true for all of us. I'm very mindful of the time, and I want to make sure I say a couple of things before we all have to sign off, even though we would like to continue talking to each other, I know. But a couple of things that we were talking about. The first thing, and I just want to float this by and see what you guys think about this. We know that this whole teleplatform that we're all trying to figure out, the telehealth world, what we've been realizing is that with all of our clinical issues that come up, whether you're dealing with depression or with kids or with whatever, there's also sort of family therapy, all kinds of things like that. There are issues. Thank you for bringing that one up, Lisa. There are things related to that we may have particular questions about. How does this look in a telehealth world to be able to manage that clinical issue? So what we were talking about is actually kind of having a sub affinity, if you will, as part of this group, which would be specifically focused on telehealth. So this group meets what, Lisa, every 3 months or 2 months?
Every two months, right.
So what we were thinking about doing is adding in the middle for people who wanted to be part of that, kind of a deeper dive into how we manage this in the telehealth world. Some people might want to come, some people might not want to, and we'll see how that works. What do you guys think about that? Does that make sense?
Are you interested? Thumbs up?
Thumbs up for that? Okay. And does it make sense to you that it be part of the clinical group? That's what I'm thinking. I don't think it's its own separate affinity group called telemental health. It is, it's because it's sort of a modality in some ways. It's not a clinical, telemental health is not a clinical issue. Telemental health actually precipitates a lot of clinical issues,
right,
which is
good point.
Which is interesting, and we haven't even touched on that yet, which I think is a whole fascinating discussion. Touches on issues for our therapist, touches on issues. If you all notice behind me, I will share this with you, and this all came from
a conversation I had with our CEO of the network, Ruben, and two other people. I was on a some kind of call with them, and I did not have that cover over the top because that is my bed back there. And I was on this call with them, and we were all joking beforehand, and somebody said, Ruben maybe, or somebody said, you know, I don't know, do you, when you talk about boundaries, do you like want your board members in your bedroom? So every morning I get up and turn my bedroom into, I usually put a cover on the back part too, try to disguise it as a bed. But some of those kind of like issues, right, counter transferential stuff. So sounds like a yes for that. People are interested in that as a separate subgroup. Okay, our next meeting is
July 16th.
And who has final parting words? I'm certain we didn't touch everything, but I got a lot of info.
Jane left and she said we didn't get to talk about how to support staff, which is
yes.
True. So
that is a big one.
Yeah. So
well, Lisa, here's the good news about that. They're not coming back yet anyhow, but we still need to support them. I'll just say one quick thing about that. I am scheduling every week, every Friday, a 10 a.m. meeting and a 4 p.m. meeting, a Zoom meeting, and inviting every single one of my therapists to show up to one, to both, to neither. But I don't usually meet with them every week that often. We usually have a counseling meeting every 2 weeks. And I don't care whether they, you know, they're not asking me or not. So it's on the calendar twice a day on Fridays.
I can email her and let her know. But it looks like people are leaving. So I want to say hi and be respectful like you do, Elaine. So thank you all for coming. Stay safe, right?
Thanks,
stay sane.
Guys.
And we'll be
safe.
In touch. Elaine.
Next time.